The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, Chapter Number 12, Text Number 38, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on May 8th, 2010, in Lost Pines Forest, Texas.
So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, chapter number 12, beginning with text number 38. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Adanam Parijatasya Sudharmaya Saralayat Rukminya Haranam Yute Pramachyad Vishato Hare. This work also describes how Lord Krishna brought from heaven the Parijata tree and the Siddharma assembly hall, and how he kidnapped Rukmini by defeating all his rivals in battle. Text 39. Harasya drimbanam yudhe banasya bhuja krintanam prajyotisha pating hatva kanyanam haranam chayat. Also narrated how Lord Krishna in the battle with Banasura defeated Lord Shiva by making him yawn, how the Lord cut off Banasura's arms, and how he killed the master of Pragjyotishapur and then rescued the young princesses held captive in that city. Text 40 and 41. Chaidya Pandraka Shalvanang Danta Vakrasya Dharmate Shambaro Dvidadapito Mura Prancha Janadiya. Mahatmyam Chavadastesham Varanashyascha Dhahanam Bharavataranam Bhumir Nimita Kritya Pandavan. There are descriptions of the powers and the deaths of the king of Chedi, Pandraka, Shavya, the foolish Dantavakra, Shambara, Dvidvida, Pita, Mura, Pancha, Danya, and other demons, along with the description how Varanasi was burned to the ground. The Bhagavatam also recounts how Lord Krishna relieved the earth's burden by engaging the Pandavas in the battle of Kurukshetra. Vandeham. Shri Guru Shri Jata Bada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha. Sagra Jatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So, isn't it a fact? Huh? Isn't it a fact? Everybody wants to be happy, don't they? You want to be happy? Yeah? Everybody wants to be happy. So why are we so miserable? If we all want to be happy, why are we so miserable? Can you say, Kirtan, why are we so miserable? Why are we so miserable?
Huh? Because we are in the material world.
But why are we in the material world?
Because when we were in Goloka, we thought that we wanted to be a god, and Krishna said, okay, I'll fulfill your desire.
Yeah, that's right. And then we came. That's right. We are miserable because we are trying to be God. We have a desire to be the supreme, to be the center of enjoyment, that everything revolves around me. You see, even a small child has this mentality. If he doesn't get his way, he throws a temper tantrum to force the parents, by screaming and doing so many things, to force the parents to give in. You see, even a little child has this mentality called the lording and over mentality. We all want to play God. So in this material world, everybody is trying to lord it over. They do it through business, they do it through physical strength. Everyone is trying, they do it by intelligence. Like they try to imagine that they're the supreme by some philosophical adjustment of Mayavadi philosophy. Everyone is trying to be in the topmost position. Nobody is able to remain in that position. No one is able to come to that position. And even if they apparently come to that position, might become a leading politician. Just like now, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, his party has been defeated. He's been defeated in the parliamentary elections. So in this way, so, in this material world, it is called struggle for existence. Our nature is to be selfish. That I want things my way. They have a saying, my way or the highway, you see. Either you do things the way I want them or you hit the highway, Jack. You see? My way or the highway. But what is that my way? It's ignorance. It's ignorance because if I want to have things my way, I'm not qualified to be the supreme controller. Are you qualified, Kirtan, to be the supreme controller? You see? Even though we are not qualified to be the supreme controller, still, we continue trying to be the supreme controller. Does it make sense? That's what we're doing. Even though we are not qualified to be the supreme controller, we still continue to try to be the supreme controller in so many ways. And therefore, we're miserable. So instead of trying to be something that we're not, which is the most frustrating thing you could ever try to do, just be who you really are. You see, then it's a very simple thing to be happy. Each and every one of us is a subordinate servant of something greater than ourselves. That's a fact. Even an atheist has to admit that there is something greater than himself. You see, death. You see, even the big, big atheist, Nietzsche, he said, God is dead. But now God has proclaimed Nietzsche is dead. He is dead and gone. So, Even the atheist, he has to bow down to death. Mrityu sarvaharashchaham. I am all devouring death. So show me any atheist who can conquer death. They all have to bow down to death. You see. So everyone has to admit that there is some power greater than himself. You see. There is some complete whole of which he is a mere part. And what is the function of the part in relationship to the whole? What is that?
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna.
No. A philosophical answer. I didn't ask you to chant Hare Krishna. What is the relationship between a part of the whole and the whole thing itself? Who can say?
The part serves the whole.
That's right. The part always serves the whole. Just like my hand is part of my body. And it serves the whole body. When it comes time for prasadam, it takes the foodstuffs and it puts it in the mouth, you see. It is serving the whole body. Now, if the hand becomes dysfunctional, it doesn't work anymore. It won't pick up the prasadam and put it in the mouth, and I got to go to the doctor. Please fix my hand. I can't eat anymore because my hand doesn't work, you see. So the hand, it is meant to serve the whole body. And by serving the whole body, then it's doing its natural function. Even your watch, you see, this little knob here, it sets the minute hand, if you turn it in one way, and it turns the other way, you can set the month and the day of the week and the number of the day. So every function, every part of the watch, it serves the complete whole function of the watch. So every single living entity within all of existence has a certain function, a certain role to play in terms of that total of existence. And if he doesn't actually, or she doesn't actually play that role, doesn't play that function, they're like a dysfunctional hand. You understand? A dysfunctional hand. So if your hand isn't working properly, you have to go to a doctor to get it fixed. Any bodily part of it is not working properly, you go to the doctor, have some surgery done, take some medicine, do some therapy to get this part of the body working properly. So, in other words, none of us are standalone entities. We all exist in relationship to a complete whole which is much greater than ourselves, and by the very nature of the relationship with the whole and the parts of the whole, we are meant to serve that complete whole. Who can deny this? This is scientific. You can observe it everywhere in nature. You can observe it everywhere in a man-made object. This is a universal scientific principle. The part is always meant to serve the whole of which it is a part. And if it's not serving, it's in a dysfunctional disease state. It needs to be repaired. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be healed, to bring back to its natural, holistically balanced position. So, in this way, the living entity should understand that I am part of a complete whole, greater than myself, so now I must come back into harmony with that complete whole. You see? So, who is that complete whole? What is that complete whole? That can be described, that can be understood. From the biological analysis and by scriptural study, one can actually see that there is a person who is indeed that complete whole. You can't get persons out of something impersonal. Did you ever meet anybody whose mom and dad was a couple of rocks? If I asked you, you're your mother or father, you'll name two persons, won't you? You wouldn't say, oh, these rocks here, you see. These are my mom and dad, these rocks, you see. Persons come from persons. They don't come from impersons. Now, the evolutionists would have us believe, you see, Charles Darwin and company, they would have us believe, well, if you just trace it back far enough, you get to impersons back there, you see. You just go down, you know, you go down to, there's human beings, and there's ape-like human beings. I actually saw one in Fiji. I couldn't believe it. I wish I had my camera. I said, that person looks like an ape. He actually looked like, he had facial features like an ape. A native Fijian man. Looked like he just come out of the jungle. I mean, he was in downtown Suva. I couldn't believe walking down the street. I wish I had my camera right now. But, so anyway, they say that we came from apes who came from someone else before the apes. And you go down to chemical evolution, you finally get down to a random thumping of some subatomic particles, you see. And they say that's where it all came from. Some subatomic particles were thumping in a random sort of way. And before you know it, what do you have? Animated clay, you see. So, where's the proof? Where's the proof? They want us to believe because Darwin says we have to accept. Well, who is this Darwin? You see? Who is this Darwin? What is his authority? The idea of evolution was already given in the Vedas. He simply took the Vedic concept and he added his own twist to it. He took God out of the picture, that's all. He took the Vedic conception of evolution and subtracted God out of it. It's already, the evolution is already described in the Vedas. So the scientists did not invent the idea of evolution. The idea of evolution is already there in the Vedas. They just polluted it with their speculation, that's all. The fact is that if something is beautifully arranged, something is nicely arranged, we can understand there must be an intelligent designer there behind it. We don't see that. Where is the proof that randomness can produce order? Where is the, you see, how you can get order out of chaos? That's what they're trying to say. Their order has arisen out of chaos. Where is an example of them? Show me an example anywhere where you can get order out of chaos. You take a whole stack of building materials, bags of cement, panes of glass, wires, drywall, panels, bricks, so many things, and you throw a stick of dynamite in there. Will you get a nice house? No. Where do we see that you can get, that you can use, that out of chaos you can get order? Do we see this as an example anywhere? In your school, did they teach you of anything like that? That you can get order out of chaos, you see? But they wanted, these scientists, they want us to believe that out of a completely chaotic situation, a big bang, kwam, all this wonderful order has come out of an explosion. That's what they want us to believe, you see? Why do they put forward such theories? Because they want to be able to engage in sense gratification without having to be responsible for the reactions. That's all. It's all very elaborate ruse, an elaborate hoax, so they can guiltlessly go around in gratifying their senses. That's all. They have to explain away any authority who's going to hold them responsible for their nonsensical activities. That's the whole underlying purpose of modern scientific theory, you see. They call it scientific theory, but what's scientific about it? Theory is not scientific. This is called a self-contradictory term. Scientific theory is doesn't make sense. It's like saying compassionate rape. You see? Someone says, I'm going to rape you compassionately. It doesn't make sense. These are contradicting terms, you see. So scientific theory is just like compassionate rape. It's a ridiculous combination of terms. They don't match. Theory means it's not scientific. Anything that's a theory, it's not scientific. Because theory, they make one theory. As modern science is, there's one theory replaced by another theory. You understanding these points? There's one theory replaced by another theory, replaced by another theory, and it never ends. They never stop. They never reach the conclusive truth because they come up with a theory, then they defeat it with a new theory, which is defeated with a new theory, and it never stops. For hundreds and thousands of years, they will go on spinning a web of theoretical speculation with another theory, another new spider web, a new improved spider web. That's all. More and more theories going on and on and on, ad infinitum. They'll never reach conclusive truth by this method. Why? Because it's all based on the imperfect senses and the imperfect mind cooking up the latest theory. If we want actual, this is called pratyaksha, evidence derived through the senses. Anumana, theoretical speculation, and these two types of evidence of gathering information or gathering knowledge will always remain imperfect. But the third, which is called shabda, that will give us perfection. To hear from the authoritative source. And who is that authoritative source? That person who's created everything. He knows what's going on. That supreme person who's the source of all existence. He understands everything, you see. It's like if you buy a Honda motor car and you want to know how it works, you get the owner's manual from the Honda company. They manufactured it. They know how each and every little tiny facet of that automobile functions perfectly. They know they created it, you see. They know every little detail. So if you want to know how something works, go to the manufacturer. The manufacturer can give perfect knowledge. So in this way, if we go to that original source, that supreme person who has manufactured everything, from him we gain perfect knowledge of everything. And then we can learn how to play our role within his symphony orchestra.
Scientist is calling.
Matei is comparing that croak to...
There's Dr. I can't turn around and look. I may fall into the water. I'm very delicately balanced here on this bench. I had to be careful not to fall off, you see. So, Doc, there's a rare toad here, I understood, in this park. It's on a list of endangered species. Dr. Frog here is on the list of the endangered species. And I think also these scientists are on the list of endangered species. Because Prabhupada has come and given this knowledge, so now the scientists are on the list of the endangered species. So anyway, I can ask if there's any questions.
I was thinking that there is so much difference between science and the theory, and yet people think that this is the science and they follow it. Why?
Why they follow the scientists? Because the scientists are giving them so many trinkets. They give them iPods, they give them, you know, iPhones, iPads, I this, I that. Who knows what the next thing is? I think we offer I Krishna, we may be successful. We'll have I Krishna.
Mayavadi is and the Mayavadi is doing that. I Krishna.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they say I Krishna. That's right. That's right.
That was nice one.
That's right. So if you're really Krishna, then prove that you're Krishna. Lift Govardhan Hill, you see. Hold it on your little finger for 7 days. Then they can enter. They want to present that I am God. And the foolish disciples believe them. Just like that one guru, he said, I don't... There's that phrase, Tattvamasmi and Aham Brahmasmi. The Mayavadis translate that incorrectly. Aham Brahmasmi means I am spirit, and Tattvamasmi means you are spirit. So they translate it, I am God and you are God. They say that spirit means God. But there's the part and parcel spirit and the complete whole spirit. They don't make that distinction, you see. So that one guru said, I don't say Aham Brahmasmi. I'm very humble. I say Tattvamasmi. I say you are God. I don't say that I'm God. And they go, oh, Guruji is so humble, you see. He is telling us that we were all God. Just see what a big God he is, you see. That he, in this way, he subtly, roundabout way, he says that he's God.
So scientists are proving, giving their part, and Mayavadis are giving their part of saying that I am God. So what is the difference?
The difference is the scientists are voidists, actually. They are Shunyavadis. They're in the Shudavad, because they say ultimately... They go back to voidness, you see. The scientists are inclined towards void. Everything comes out of nothing. That's the scientist.
There is not much difference.
There's not much difference. Any other question? Yeah.
Gurudev, in a system, if a part is not functioning well, then it affects the whole system. For example, like you gave the example of watch, you know, so if let's say the battery is not working well, or if the hour or minute hands are not working well, it affects the whole thing. It defeats the purpose. So if, let's say, you know, comparing that to me being a part and Krishna being whole, if I'm not functioning well, then why doesn't it affect Krishna? Or
why do you think it doesn't affect Krishna? Krishna is greatly affected. Don't you know? And he's been in great anxiety, feeling great anxiety for millions of your lifetimes in this sojourn in material existence. Krishna is greatly disturbed by the fact that you've become entangled in the material nature. It has affected Krishna. Okay. You think he's some uncompassionate autocrat? No. He is loving father. He's very much affected. That's why he personally comes. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavite dvarata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam shujamyaham. That's why he comes. That's why he sends pure devotees like Prabhupada. You see? Because he's very much affected by our nonsense. And he wants to save us. Next question. Yeah.
Gurudev, since scientists have come much closer to the understanding the origin of the universe, can they...
You think they have?
From better than what they knew before.
You think so? Why do you say they've come closer to understand the origin of the universe? Previously, they were more God-conscious. The original scientists, they had some God-consciousness. Even Einstein had some God-consciousness. Why do you say they're coming closer? I say they're going further away.
They understand the universe much better than what they understood before.
Really? You really think they do, huh?
They have more photographs than before.
More photographs. More sophisticated telescopes.
Yeah, they have this Hubble telescope, you know, they can now see better than, you know, what they could see earlier.
We have more websites.
They're becoming more blind, actually. They're getting further and further off the track. Previously, when they weren't so puffed up by having all these big, big, powerful instruments, they were closer to understanding the real facts. By all of their technological advancement, they become more blind, actually.
Yeah.
Any other question? Yeah.
You said the three ways to understand is Anumana,
Pratyaksha, Anumana, and Shabdam.
So, are the Anumana and Pratyaksha
imperfect? They are the materialistic way. You see, the scientists, they observe with their imperfect senses, that's Pratyaksha, and then they cook up some theory, that's Anumana. The philosophers, they just focus mostly on theories, you see. They're the same thing, the scientists. But they prefer the third, these two things go together, Pratyaksha and Anumana. You observe with imperfect senses, then you come up with a theory based on what you observe with your imperfect senses. So the sense observation is imperfect and the theories are imperfect. But Shabda means hearing transcendental sound vibration from a perfect source. Then your knowledge is perfect. Any other questions?
Kirtan. They're making noise so we can have Kirtan.
Huh?
Kirtan, Kirtan.
Why?
Making noise so they go away.
Oh no, it's not that bad. Not disturbing. This is a kirtan also. The class is a kirtan. Question?
The other day on Thought for the Day, there was a person that asked about Satya Sai Baba.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop laughing when he said that, you know, he's Krishna.
He wanted to go meet because he's in God's incarnation, yeah.
And I really liked how you responded.
You did or did not?
I did.
You did, okay.
Yes, of course, I did. So my question is, you said that there's some people that try and get some kind of powers and yet they're yogis.
Yes, through the if one goes and studies, you go to the Himalayas. You see, you give up the civilization. You go to the Himalayas and you study under the qualified yogis, and there are many such yogis in the Himalayas. You have to undergo great austerities. Then you can learn all these different things. You can learn how to levitate. You can learn how to do all kinds of magic.
But what is the purpose? Like,
there's no purpose. All you can do is, I could levitate this high off the ground, or I can sit on the bench. You know? One of my godbrothers, he went to meet some of these yogis in the Himalayas, and you know, they were sitting down in the morning, and they some of them just started levitating. They're about this high off the ground, like I am now. They just did it by levitation. So, what's the purpose of spending so much time and energy learning how to sit this high off the ground when I can sit on the bench? You see, better to learn how to do the ultimate levit. We are teaching you also the art of levitation. We are teaching how to levitate all the way to Goloka Vrindavan. You see, so we are more powerful than those yogis. We will teach you the ultimate levitation. They teach Prapti Siddhi, where I can reach, just like we forgot, let's say we forgot something in Austin. One of these yogis, he can, through Prapti Siddhi, he can sit here, he can reach to Austin and pull it right here, like that. That's called Prapti Siddhi. So, but can they bring Krishna? No, they cannot bring Krishna. They can only bring something made of material energy. But we are more powerful Prapti Siddhis, have more powerful Prapti Siddhi. We are more powerful Prapti Siddhas because we can bring Krishna. So in all of these cities that the yogis possess, they may be very impressive for the materialistic person. But our cities are more powerful. We can bring Krishna. That's the difference. Any other? Yeah.
So my other question is about jnanis. Like, there are people that within our moment also, there are people that read books and develop knowledge and stuff. I'm someone that's more into devotional service than gaining knowledge about, you know, the number of years or the yugas and stuff. Is it all right for a devotee to do devotional service?
Yes, yes, of course. But you should understand that Krishna, that my knowledge you must have, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah. No, it's not required that everyone should become a learned scholar. Just like there's that example of that illiterate Brahmin in South India. He could not even read, but he was accepted as the greatest scholar because of his devotion. So simply, if you have the complete devotion to Krishna, then automatically, even without so much Sanskrit knowledge, you'll become the greatest scholar. So every devotee will naturally become a scholar. So we'll stop here.
You can go on now.
Oh, we can continue? Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
You have to mention, like, we have to be, to convince others, we have to be firmly convinced ourselves.
Yes, yes.
So I'm wondering how we become firmly convinced in the sense of, and also remain open-minded, like to...
Yes, and the more you open your mind, the more you'll be convinced. That's a thing. Our lack of conviction is due to closed-mindedness. You understand? The more your mind becomes open, the more you'll be convinced about Krishna. What is the difference between open mind and closed mind? That we have to understand. Open mind means, or let's say closed mind means prejudice. You have a preconceived idea what is reality. Without open-mindedly considering what is reality, you'd blindly accept some dogma that it was crammed down your brain by the dogmatists, propagandists. It's like we've been taught that sense gratification is the all in all. If you want to be happy, you got to have your sense gratification. It's been deeply programmed into us. This American culture, you see, it deeply programs into one into sense gratification. We've been programmed in so many ways. It's like here we are at this lake. There's a popular song that we in America we grew up, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream, merrily, 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 life is but a dream. You see, we are programmed to think that life is, the whole thing's just a dream. The whole thing's just an illusion. You see? I mean, it's just things that are just taken for granted. We don't even realize how we've been programmed, you see. Things go better with Coca-Cola. It was a big thing. It was a very popular jingle back in the 60s. You know, now they have a new one. I don't know what it is. But, you know, we've been so much programmed. It's like everywhere you go, you see men and women. I couldn't believe it, you know. I got some product. At one time I ordered some product in the mail. A nice product that I could use in Krishna's service. But then in the little thing that came with it, it showed a boy and a girl hugging very tightly where her bodily parts were touching him. It was very, very lewd sort of an illustration just to promote the product. You see, just the product had nothing to do with sex enjoyment. But they're using this sort of advertising to promote it. Her bodily parts were touching his bodily parts. It was very lewd. It's a very, you could say, very suggestive thing, you know. And in this culture, everything is sold on this basis. Just like they, Southwest Airlines used to have it was an in company memo. It said, "Sex sells seats" on the airplane. See, and they had all at that time. They had all the stewardesses dressed in these mini skirts, you know, and you know it's ridiculous. You know, the whole they try to use sex to sell everything. So we're completely programmed into this whole sexual thing, and it's confirmed by Krishna. This whole mentality is confirmed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 15. No, excuse me, chapter number 16, section number 8. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishvaram aparasparasambhutam kim anyat kama haitukam. they say that this world is unreal. Think of life is but a dream. Row, row, row your boat. They say this life is unreal, with no God, with no foundation, and with no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire, with no cause other than lust. So they say everything is based on sex. Freud was saying it's all based on sex, you see. Everything is based on the sex pleasure. So if you want to be happy, you just got to have sex pleasure, arrange your life for sex pleasure. This is the whole foundation. So we've been deeply, deeply programmed in this way. So give up this being closed-minded, of seeing through the distorted lenses of Mayavadi, life is but an illusion philosophy, and bogey, life means to hedonistic, and life is meant to enjoy my senses. Give up this closed-mindedness and say, okay, well, let me just step back from all of this, of seeing everything based on gratifying my senses, or trying to deny it after when it becomes unpalatable to say it's all an illusion, you see, which is karmi and jnani. Give up the prejudice, the closed-minded, the karmi jnani mentality, and just try to connect with the Supreme Absolute Truth, which is there within your heart and is there within every atom and there between every atom. Open your mind. You see. Don't buy in to this insane dogma that has been programmed down your throat ever since the day you came out of your mother's womb. Don't buy into it. You got to kick it out. That closed-mindedness. It's so ridiculous, you know. I went to the university. I remember studying in the university. And, you know, they're supposed to teach you how to think objectively in the university, isn't it? Now we will train you how to think objectively. You've been programmed by subjective thinking. Now we will teach you how to think objectively. And what do they say? Oh, the Vedas are a myth. The Vedas are mythology, because we couldn't believe that Krishna could have 16,000 queens. It's not possible for one man to have 16,000 wives and 16,000 palaces. Therefore, it is mythology. Now, is that being open-minded? No, they are blindly accepting something. Yes, that is dogma. Blindly rejecting is also dogma. They blindly reject the Vedas. That's not open-mindedness. They say they're teaching open-mindedness in the university, but they are teaching closed-mindedness in the university. That I have seen. If a professor tells all the students, "Yeah, it's cool. You can have boyfriends, and you can have sex with boys and girls both. It's cool." They tell the students like that in the university, no problem. He won't get in trouble with the professor, the administration. He can promote sexual freedom like them in the classroom. If he talks about God, finished. He can lose his position. He can encourage the students it's okay to have boyfriends and girlfriends, both for sex. Bisexual, you see. That's all right. That they can promote. But if they promote that there is God, that's taboo. That's not allowed. That's what's going on in the places like the University of Texas, you see. It's big, where 50,000 students are being indoctrinated, you know, every day. This is what's happening right now in the world. And this mentality is spreading to India, too. You see, same move. So we're fighting a war now with illusion. We're fighting a big-time war with illusion, to try to defeat this demoniac mentality, which is strengthening its stranglehold on the human civilization every day, tightening a little bit more, a little bit more, and just see the reactions. The more and more we become demoniac, the more the world civilization turns into chaos. The more we see mass murders, the more we see cruelty, the more we see natural disruptions. What is that called? Adi Daivik. Aya Fiatla Yukut, for example. Aya Fiatla Yukut volcano, which stranded us in Europe. for a little bit. So these, all these disruptions, it is coming due to godlessness. Now the stock market just took a huge burp. They're freaking out again about Wall Street. So, you know, there's just so much chaos. So anyway, we can stop here. We thank you all very much for your participation in this Krishna consciousness retreat here in the Lost Pines of Central Texas. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.